one of my earliest memories, in fact, perhaps my earliest memory, is being on our living room couch looking out the window and watching two men carry this thing, roll this thing up the sidewalk. I didn't know what it was. It was the back of a spinet piano, as I couldn't even see the keyboard, and they brought it in. And of course, every child at that age took piano lessons, and my older brother and I were carted off to the piano teacher. She wouldn't take me because I was five and I couldn't read, and that was her basic criteria. So my brother started and hated every minute of it and would sort of begrudgingly practice. And after he finished, I'd walk over to the piano and sit down and sort of pick out his pieces, and I was eventually playing them better than he was. So they took me back to the piano teacher, who made an exception in my case.
One thing I'd like to ask you, I noticed on your website that you play piano, organ, and harpsichord. Now, I don't play a keyboard instrument, but I wanted to ask you about the differences, if there are any, and how you approach playing each one of these instruments.
Yes, actually, they're quite different from each other, and that's kind of the reason it's not as difficult to do if they were more similar. The organ is, the touch on the organ is very different from the touch on the piano, and the way one is expressive on the organ is very different from the way one is expressive on the piano. The harpsichord is even, partly, sort of further removed, more or less due to informed historical practice these days. So you play those three different keyboard instruments in a very different way.
Do you have a preference? Do you have an affinity for all three?
I really have an affinity for the piano and the organ. I do play the harpsichord occasionally, but I play the organ every Sunday in church. I play the piano every day, and those are the two things that are closest to my heart.
I noticed that you've been employed by numerous churches as a minister of music. How is performing in a church different than, say, performing in a concert hall like you'll be doing here at Arkansas State University?
Well, actually here, the church job I have at the moment allows me to play very good organ music. So I perform high-quality organ music every Sunday here as part of the voluntary, the music before the service. I always improvise the postlude, the music after the service. So I would say that I play the same quality music. I'm very lucky about that, in fact. I play the same quality of music every Sunday that I play on the concert stage.
Obviously for a little bit different audience, though, perhaps.
Right, right, yeah, except that actually the congregation here, as this is a university town, quite erudite and urbane, and they really appreciate good music.
I want you to elaborate on something you just said. You said that at the end of the service you improvise. What exactly did you mean by that?
That is a thing that some jazz musicians do and some organists do, not as many in America as in Europe, where it's taken sort of more seriously. Improvising means you simply make up the music as you go. I usually improvise some sort of music, whether it be a fugue or a fantasy, on the tune of the last hymn. So it kind of unifies the last part of the service.
I wanted to ask you about that because that seems like odd isn't exactly the right word for it, but it's an unusual thing for a church organist to do, is to improvise.
Well, it's certainly a helpful skill to have in your bag of tricks. Not only improvising large-scale work like a postlude, but also just little mimics of music throughout the service. In France, for example, improvisation is taken very seriously, and it's a part of every organ lesson at the conservatory level. Here, there are a few schools around the country that teach improvisation, but not nearly as many as there should be.
Now, you've traveled around the world to perform. Have your travels and encounters with other cultures influenced your playing, and if so, how?
I wouldn't say my encounters with other cultures have influenced my playing, but I would say encounters with musicians around the world, because we talk to each other, we compare notes, and it's always fascinating to hear other people's take on things and on a sort of sophisticated level. So I enjoy that very much, but I've sort of found my groove, and that's kind of where I am at the moment.
Well, have you found that one particular work that would be well-received in America may not be received as well in Asia or vice versa?
You know, that's an interesting question. The world has become so global, so close to each other, that you look at piano recitals that are played in Singapore, pardon me, or Taiwan, the same music that's played in New York City and Carnegie Hall. So we're much closer together than we used to be.
Well, tell us about some of the works you've chosen to perform on the program you'll present here at Arkansas State University.
Well, I'm opening the program with a delightful intermezzo by Francis Poulenc, a 20th century French composer. It has all of the Poulenc-isms that everybody loves about his music. You know, it always amazes me that we only have 12 notes in the musical scale, and we have a limited number of rhythms. Yet only Poulenc could be Poulenc. Only Bach could be Bach. You know, it's just amazing. And speaking of Bach, I'm playing a transcription of a Bach fugue as the second piece in this program, and I'm playing it because it's a very interesting example of Bach's interest in use of numerology. So I'll talk to the audience about that. Third piece on the program is a beautiful little lyric piece by Mili Balakirev called In the Garden. He was the teacher of Alexander Borodin and Peter Tchaikovsky, and so it's a beautiful sort of Russian piece. Followed is a very late Beethoven sonata. In fact, it's the penultimate Beethoven sonata, Opus 110 in A-flat. A very beautiful, very searching work, a very sad work in many ways. The last movement has two beautiful, very doleful arias that finally evolve into a fugue, which brings everything back to life in a sort of triumphant cadence. Following that is another French piece by Gabriel Fauré, a very beautiful nocturne. And I'm finishing the program with a B-flat minor scherzo by Frédéric Chopin.
Many composers very well represented on your program that you have planned for Arkansas State University.
Well, I've did my best to play some familiar music and also two or three pieces that many of the people and many of the students may not have heard before, so trying to bring them some new music as a result.
Well, what would you say to encourage people to come to a concert like yours? Quite often, unfortunately, people hear of a solo piano recital and they have ideas of going to their grandchildren's recital or hearing a student perform. But you're going to be giving something that is somewhat unique. What would you say to encourage people to come and hear this program that you have planned?
Well, I would say, first of all, I've been on both sides of the fence. I was that kid who was playing at the piano recital that the grandparents suffered through. So I understand very well what they might be thinking. But I think that this program is very has a lot of variety, has a lot of excitement, a lot of color, and I think that it'd be a great way to spend an hour and 20 minutes on a Sunday afternoon.